all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Dave Biller. Dave is a former United States Air Force sergeant. He spent 6 years in the service. And we have him on today because we're going to talk about some of the contamination issues that he ran into at Anderson Air Force Base on Guam, which is a very large complex, and a little bit about what his experiences have been with the VA in that regards. Dave, welcome to Veterans Radio.
I appreciate Jim having me on.
Well, this is we've done a few of these toxic or environmental issues at bases. We've done Army forts and closed Air Force bases. What we're talking about today is Anderson Air Force Base on Guam, which I mentioned is a very large territory. It's been a base since about 1944, and while many people won't know where Guam is, it's in the it's kind of between Japan and Australia, west of Hawaii. It's this little dot in this very big ocean. But it's important because it's a Western Pacific base where the United States Air Force has heavy strategic bombers. And Dave, when were you on Guam?
I was on Guam from 1986 to 1988.
And in what capacity were you at the Air Force Base?
I worked in civil engineering in a carpenter shop. I was a mason. So I did mainly concrete work, you know, block type work.
And did that work take you all over the base? Or tell us a little bit about what that that MOS would have done and what kind of where you would have worked.
Well, on Guam, there's a, you know, they have a typhoons come through there, so pretty much all the buildings are, at least nowadays, are all concrete. When I was there, probably 95% were concrete buildings, and they were built. A lot of them were built right after World War II, so there was a lot of spalling going on, and so I did a lot of that kind of work. There was a fuel pipeline that ran across the island between the Air Force Base and Navy. And I used to prepare the feet, you know, the footings for the pipeline going across the island, tank farms, just about everywhere. And then the last year and a half I was there, I was assigned to a construction team that they put together, and we did heavy renovation work. And the mission, our goal was to save contract money. And so we were doing heavy renovations around the base.
And one of the things that you provided to me in getting ready for our interview was some information, a 1987 Government Accounting Office report, or GAO report, that talked about the base's challenges with handling of hazardous waste and materials. This report was issued right during that period that you were at the base. Tell us a little bit about while you were there, was there any heightened attention or scrutiny to the chemicals and the hazardous waste being generated?
Well, there wasn't at the time. Of course, I was young. You know, I was only like 19 at the time, but I was given a lot of assignments that at the time I didn't realize were tied to this GAO report, which I come across during my research. And one of the work orders I received shortly after I got there was to cut these curbs up around the power pro area. You know, they did all the line voltage, the high voltage power, and they had transformer storage. And when I cut these curbs, the curbs were actually built to, you know, a containment to hold the chemicals back. And they had me cut them all so, you know, this, everything could just run freely out through the field. At the time, I didn't think about it. You know, you're young and you don't think about that kind of stuff. One of the other areas that I worked was, I didn't know that this at the time either, but the contamination levels in the wells down by the Marbo Annex spiked at the beginning of 1986. And the Air Force, they drilled relief wells with less contaminated water, and they pumped it into the heavier contaminated wells in an attempt to try to dilute the contamination. At the time, they didn't have any way to filter the water. They had no filtration plant. I understand it now that that's all changed. They have filtration now, but at the time, they didn't.
Well, and I think when people hear that, particularly with today's sensibilities, you know, it really grates on us because we know that the solution to pollution is not dilution. And for them to simply say, oh, yeah, we got high chemicals, we shouldn't be drinking this water, let's just blend it down till we get an acceptable level. As you say, at the time you didn't think about it, but that's one of the items identified by EPA and these GAO reports and subsequent environmental reports, isn't it?
Yeah. The EPA did a report in September of 2010, and they listed 41 contaminants in the soil and water on Guam around Anderson Air Force Base. So while a lot of people, you know, they may have exposure to Agent Orange, and of course Agent Orange was used on the island, but they also had exposure to a lot of these other chemicals.
And EPA identifies some of these solvents such as trichloroethane, TCE, paint thinners, dry cleaning fluids, laundry products, JP4 fuels, gasoline, pesticides, antifreeze, anti-aircraft cleaning compounds, PCBs. The list kind of goes on and on. As you say, there were 41 of them. Did these exposures, in your view, Dave, ultimately have an impact on your health?
I believe they did because I've been, for the past 5 years, I've been going to doctors. I have neuropathy pretty bad in my hands and my feet, and I've got issues where my hands swell up, and I've been to neurologists. I've been to, you know, other specialized doctors. I've been to MS-type doctors, and they're still having trouble trying to figure out how to treat my symptoms. I haven't truly got a diagnosis, but there's a pain management clinic up near Pittsburgh that I started going to, and one of the doctors that owns this place happens to be an Air Force vet. He was a flight surgeon. So, you know, we kind of bonded, and they actually sent my blood to the Mayo Clinic. And even after all these years, I still had four types of PCBs in my system. And, of course, PCBs were banned way back in the 70s. And the way he explained it to me is nowadays, you know, as these transformers and fluorescent lights and stuff get taken out of buildings, there's less and less exposure. So it's unusual for somebody to have high levels like I do now.
Well, and I think it's, you know, very likely that the connection is to that exposure that you had when you were, as you mentioned, you were young, and maybe didn't know better, and maybe weren't provided the personal protective gear that others might have gotten today. So let's talk a little bit about. Dave, you've made a disability claim because of this chemical exposure with the VA, but these are really tough things for the VA to agree have occurred. Tell us what that odyssey has been for you.
Well, it's been a long road. You know, it started way back in 1991 when I got out of the service in my exit exam. The doctor told me that when I got out to file a claim with the VA because I had severe polyps in my nasal passages. Well, when I went to the VA, I filed a claim. They did an examination. They said there was nothing wrong. So I went to a private doctor, and they ended up doing surgery. And I've been going from there ever since. And for the most part, when I was younger, I could ignore a lot of the symptoms I've had. But it seemed like when I reached, 40, things started, getting worse. And I haven't been able to get them totally under control. It's impacted my ability to work and do things. I like to hunt, and I have trouble going out in the cold now.
And that neuropathy, or the loss of sense of feelings in your extremities, is where that super sensitivity to the cold comes in. Have any of the doctors talked to you about, that may be from the chemical exposure that you had when you were working on the civil engineering crews?
Well, this pain management clinic, they believe that that's what happened. And I've been getting medical care, around the board. I have my primary care doctor, and I have some specialists, and I've also been going to a psychologist because these chemicals can cause different types of damage to your body, and didn't realize it until I started doing research that it causes psychological damage as well. And, for my psychological evaluation, that doctor determined that, anything that was psychological was tied to medical conditions. The problem is they haven't really been able to give me a true diagnosis. They, of my medical condition, they can only treat the symptoms.
And you had mentioned to me that you made a claim with the VA because of Agent Orange exposure, but as it turned out for you, that wasn't the best way to go. Talk a little bit about your experiences with the VA and chemical exposures, and maybe there are some lessons you've learned that you want to pass on to other vets who've been at these kind of bases so that they don't make the same missteps that you maybe made.
Yeah, and I've been really trying to put that word out because a lot of people focus on Agent Orange. And, I tell people that they need to do their research. That's what I did. I had to do a lot of reading, digging into documents, and I found chemicals, and I went, that were tied to Guam, and I looked at places where I was, places that I worked, and I looked at the, maps. There is a lot of different documentation that you have to go through, and that's how you determine your nexus. You show that you worked in an area or you lived in a certain section of housing that had contaminated water. And that's your nexus, that's your tie. And then the next step is you have to tie your medical condition to that chemical or a list of chemicals. You might have lived in an area or worked in an area where you weren't only exposed to Agent Orange, you were exposed to TCE and PCBs and some other, chemicals. And one of the problems is the medical communities, they don't truly know how to treat, or they don't fully understand what happens to the human body when you're exposed to multiple chemicals. And there's a lot of research going on, but they just don't have it down pat yet.
And Dave, because I've looked at the materials you've sent over, and you've done a great job of kind of compiling your story to submit to VA. Could you talk a little bit about sort of how and where you did this research you're talking about?
All of my research has been online. You can find a lot of Google is your buddy, looking for documentation. And actually right now, for people that were stationed on Guam, you can go to, I have a website, and that all they need to do is Google Guam contamination and it'll come up. And there's also a few other websites that are out there, too. They're mainly focused on Agent Orange because those guys they're older, and they were the Vietnam generation. But they actually got it all started. I got a lot of initial information from them, and then I just kept digging in from there, doing doing Google searches for EPA, you know, that Google's your friend, like I said.
I think that's the message I wanted to get across here, is that you didn't just look at Department of Defense or Air Force records. You were sort of marrying up what you knew about the island and where the Air Force was and where the units were, and then you had to marry that up to the environmental research and maps and information that the GAO or EPA or some other, maybe there's even a Guam agency, I don't know. But that's the key to your research, wasn't it? To kind of marry up all that little pieces of information from different places.
Yeah, I mean, I gathered research from the University on Guam. There were some professors over there that have done papers on the contamination over there. So there's a lot of different types of information you can find, and that's how you tie it together. You have to have, you've got to show that evidence that, you know, where you worked, and like I said, what the contaminants are, and, you know, that they were located in your, you know, where you were located. And then you have to tie your illness or your symptoms. Doesn't necessarily have to be an illness, but it could be your symptoms, tie that back to the chemical exposure.
Did you submit, when you submitted this information to VA, what kind of response did you get, Dave?
Well, they rejected it. You know, I submitted a report that was around 138 pages, I believe it was. There was a lot of information in there, and, of course, they rejected it, and I appealed. And we went to a hearing, and the judge determined that I proved I was exposed to chemicals while on Guam. I had a lot of evidence that I presented. And he ordered the VA to go back and review my package again and determine if there are any illnesses or symptoms that I have that could be tied to those chemicals. But it's been about 3 years. I mean, any veteran out there that has filed a claim knows how long it takes. And I haven't received a response yet, so I'm still waiting.
And veteran radio listeners, we're talking to Dave Biller. He served in the United States Air Force for 6 years, came out as a sergeant. He worked in the carpenter shop as a mason on Guam at the Anderson Air Force Base. Those are the experiences we're talking about. Now, Dave, you've done a tremendous amount of research, and I think people might say, boy, I hear what Dave did. You know, maybe he's a rocket scientist. I don't think I could do this. What would you say to the individual out there listening or spouse listening who might go, yeah, well, Dave could do that, but it's not something I can do?
Well, it is. You have to be willing. It's a lot of work. You have to be willing to do the research and reading the materials, because everybody is different, you know. What I did when I was on the island, places I worked and places I've been, might be different than someone else. So everybody has to do their own research. And, I mean, you can look at the people you served with. I have people that I served with while I was on Guam that are having similar issues, health issues, as I am. So we write buddy letters. Buddy letters, you can use those in your submission for your claim as evidence. And that's the thing. You have to be willing to put in the work. There's time involved in it, but there's a lot of information out there now. I mean, like me, I'm putting documentation on my website. You know, people can go there. You know, I have no problems with them using this information in their, you know, for their claims. They just need to tie the information to their specific tour while they were on the island, and they also have to tie in the illnesses associated with it.
And I think that's a good point that we should stress, Dave Biller, is that many bases, there's some advocate like you out there who is compiling information and creating a community and saying, hey, if you were at this base and you have some problems like this, here's some information. Let's share what you have, and I'll share what I have. And I've seen people swapping photographs that have been instrumental to winning their case, you know, that sort of thing. So is that the sense you get as you've been doing your research, is that there's a lot of cooperation among the veterans?
Yeah, and I can give you a good example. Because there was a Master Sergeant Foster who was on the island of Guam. He sprayed Agent Orange over there for 10 years. And there was another fellow that served over there during that time, Vance Anderson. And they had photographs. And it just, it was a coincidence that one of the photographs that they had was, I had a very similar photograph of the same POL lot. So they had a photograph of them moving Agent Orange barrels, and they claimed that they punctured those barrels and that stuff ran all over the ground. And when I was there in that same spot doing a work order, we were building a barrier of protection. I think it was a fire hydrant. I can't remember. It's been a long time ago. But my picture shows dead vegetation all over the place. The whole lot was dead. So they were still, I don't know if they were spraying Agent Orange at the time I was there. I know when Foster was spraying there, he stopped shortly before I arrived on the island. But, you know, that stuff, when it's in the ground, it lasts for a while.
Well, and that's a good point. I think one of the things that we should all be concerned about is if that contamination has made it to the drinking water or the groundwater area, which is used for many places. And we're not just talking about the past on contamination on Guam. We're talking about how that contamination affects the future. One of the things our listeners may not know, and you probably know more than most on because you're focused on Guam, which is that the Marines are shutting down some of their activities on Okinawa and moving to the relocating to Guam to establish the Marine Air Ground Task Force in that area. And there's, I think it's predicted that they're going to have 5,000 Marines and approximately 1,300 family members moving to Guam here in the next year or two. As you think about what you've been researching, what do you think about this particular buildup of troops?
Well, I have a lot of concerns because, you know, having been there and knowing all the information that I have now, the military, they're big on expeditionary forces nowadays, and that's going to be the Pacific Training Center for, you know, the whole Pacific side for the military. And you know, the Marbo Annex, which is an abandoned housing that the Air Force abandoned from contamination, what I read, they're planning on using that housing as an urban warfare training area. And you know as well as I do, when these Marines go in there and they're doing urban warfare training, they're going to be rolling around in the soil. You know, they're going to be making dust. They're going to breathe this stuff in. So the question is that soil safe now? You know, if they've abandoned that housing for so many years, it seems to me that the contamination would be pretty heavy.
Well, this is the sort of thing that unless you were on the ground and thinking about it, you know, it might pass you right on by. And that's why we do these podcast interviews, to bring to the veteran radio listeners sort of these issues, not only the past, but what might happen in the future. We're just about out of time here, Dave Biller, United States Air Force veteran. Can you tell people again, if they're interested in this issue particularly, or they want to know more about the contamination of Guam, or maybe even how to do their own research for their own experiences, how do they get in contact with you? How do they follow this information?
Yeah, they can Google Guam contamination, and it'll bring up my website, and then they can also do a search on Facebook. I have two different areas on Facebook. I have a group, which is a closed group, and I have it closed because not everybody wants their information that they post to be public, which is understandable. And then I have a general page, which people can go there and like. And I try to, when it comes to general information, not so much information on a particular person, I try to post that to both pages, the page and the group. But they can get more detailed information and have conversations with people in the group. And the group keeps growing.
Well, we hope to assist in getting the information out. I want to thank you, Dave Biller, for giving us a little time today on Veterans Radio.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on, Jim. I really would like to get the word out to people. And I have people coming and asking me questions of how they go about doing things. And the biggest thing I can tell you, if you're going to file a claim with the VA, is do not file under Agent Orange. You need to file under toxin exposure or chemical exposure, because there, like I said, there's 41 toxins that are known by the EPA, the EPA's own report on Guam, and you may have been exposed to any number of those chemicals.
Well, I want to thank you again, and Veteran Radio listeners, until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.